The following Dharma encounter with Jeffrey Shugen Arnold Roshi took place at Zen Mountain Monastery at the conclusion to a week-long meditation session. As you'll hear, Dharma encounters begin with the introduction of a topic related to Zen practice and training. Students then volunteer to present their understanding of the topic or a question for the Dharma encounter teacher to reflect on. The presence of fellow students means that anyone in attendance can benefit from the exchange. We hope you enjoy.
Oh, good morning, everybody. So this morning is Dharma Encounter, as we are concluding our April session. And for those unfamiliar, this is one of the teaching methods in our tradition, along with Taisho, the Mando, face-to-face teaching, everyday interactions. And in the history of Buddhism, going back to the Buddha, and in many practice-based traditions, there are meetings between a teacher and a student in which a question is raised, a point is made. Sometimes it's instructional, sometimes it's guiding. Sometimes it's what we call in our tradition direct pointing, which is not so much about information, but it's really trying to shift a student's state of mind, open a door to reveal something about their own self-nature. And so Dharma Encounter is meeting each other in that field. And what I wanted to focus on today was to continue a little bit with what I took up yesterday in the Taisho, which is the training relationship, to speak of it that way, between the student and teacher. Everybody who encounters Buddhism learns pretty quickly that an essential teaching, particularly in Mahayana Buddhism, is that everyone is endowed with Buddha nature, which means from the beginning you have what you seek in an ultimate sense. If what we're looking for is an ultimate experience of peace, fulfillment, a resolution of all that is not resolved in the deepest sense, then the Buddha realized that we all have that within us. We're not going to find that outside. And within many of the traditions of Buddhism, there is the role of the teacher, beginning with the Buddha. And so what is that, given that the student is already in full possession of an enlightened mind? So that's what I wanted to look at a little bit. Now, drawing on yesterday's teachings from Master Dogen, Dogen taught that Shakyamuni Buddha saw Mahakashyapa, his disciple, in person. And Mahakashyapa saw the Venerable Ananda, his successor, in person. And Ananda bowed formally to Mahakashyapa's Buddha face. This is face-to-face transmission, Dogen says. An ancestor, a teacher, or a disciple cannot be a Buddha or an ancestor, or I would say a student, without having face-to-face transmission. It's like pouring water into the ocean and spreading it endlessly, or like transmitting the lamp and allowing it to shine forever. The disciple sees the teacher sees the disciple. They meet each other. They see each other, as Dogen said, in person. There are many ways we can think of and talk about being a student of the way. We come in having been students, most of us in school for many years, which means you go to a classroom, typically. There's a teacher who has certain information, has gained certain knowledge, has certain understanding. They impart that in various ways. The student is there to receive that, to learn, to integrate it. And so we come in with years of history embodied within us about being a student. And of course, we're going to carry much of that in. Some of that's going to be helpful. Some of it may not be. And so what I wanted to look at is some of the basic tensions, what I often think of as tensions, important, necessary tensions within practice. We often think of tension as a negative thing, stress-related, causing pain and discomfort. This is different. It can cause discomfort and stress, for that matter, but in a healthy way, in a way of working towards something, a resolution, really. So while I think of it often in terms of tensions, we can also look at it in terms of dualities. So here are a few to reflect on. Having Buddha nature, we each, as students, need to trust ourselves, right? In a deep way. Dharu Roshi used to say that over and over again. Trust yourself, profoundly trust in yourself. We also need to trust the teacher if we're going to study with a teacher. I mean, otherwise, it, you know, obviously it doesn't make sense to do that. Sometimes those are in alignment. What if they're not? What is trust in the teacher and trust in oneself? To rely on your own understanding, right? Because you're developing understanding. You're here. We're here to develop understanding, direct understanding, transformational understanding, the understanding of awakened mind. And so to rely on understanding at the same time, to question our understanding, to be able to doubt our understanding. The tension between speaking too much, speaking too little. What does that mean? What might that mean in the context of being a student? Particularly in the Zen tradition, there's a lot of emphasis on relying too much on the intellect, the conceptual, trying to figure things out, make everything line up, bring the Dharma into conformity with a linear, rational way of seeing things based on what we already know. And so there's a lot of encouragement to free ourselves of that. But at the same time, on the other side, we can ignore the intellect and conceptual. In being a student, it's common at moments, sometimes often, to be insecure. To doubt oneself, to doubt one's understanding, doubt one's capacity. And so there's building confidence. But on the other side of that is being arrogant. Being confident in an unrealistic way. Being confident in a way that's not actually confidence, but it's just self-grasping. It's very common in being a student to want to seek the approval of the teacher. If that relationship doesn't matter to us, it's not a healthy relationship. But that can become a kind of seeking of approval that is not healthy, but on the other side of that is not seeking approval in a way that's not healthy. Wanting to be special, wanting to be seen, wanting to be the best, a shining star. On the other side of that is wanting not to be seen. Wanting to be heard, wanting not to be heard. Wanting to be challenged, not wanting to be challenged. In gaining confidence, which is a really essential part of the practice and training, there's gaining confidence, which can become arrogance. And then there's humility. In a sense, as we gain confidence, continuing to have and develop humility becomes even more important and more real. There's following the example of the teacher, which is natural, it's important, it's one of the ways we learn. spoke about that yesterday, but not imitating. And so in a way, we can think of these as tensions or dualities. And in that sense, they're not questions that we just seek an answer to, and then the tension goes away. They're lived experiences. The Buddha said our impulse is to swing between extremes. One of the fundamental extremes in Buddhism is nihilism, misunderstanding emptiness, nothing is, nothing exists. And on the other hand is eternalism, everything is just a material object that exists unto itself. But there are many ways we can look at the middle way. Rejecting and grasping. Too loose, too tight. And those extremes and the freedom from those extremes, actually liberating ourselves within the middle way, is a lived thing. Right? It's not a formula that we have to find the correct answer to. And so how do you live those tensions, those dynamics, in the path of being a student of the way? How do we seek the teachings without abdicating responsibility? As Dogen says, wholeheartedly, unreservedly relying upon the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. How do we do that without turning away from ourselves? How to have faith in the Buddha nature, in being a person of suchness while accepting our own delusion. Accepting other people's, having faith in other people's Buddha nature while accepting their delusion and attachments. In the case that I took up yesterday, Master Keizan said, he talked about it in terms of purity, and I spoke about that, but I want to frame this in terms of selflessness. He said, those who are really selfless do not even establish selflessness. And so their vessel, their Buddha body, as a vessel of the Dharma, is not established either. This is why the path of teacher and apprentice or teacher and student merge. This is how they merge. That those on the path of selflessness do not even establish selflessness. He said, when you enter into the way, then you can be called a teacher. You can also be called a student. Therefore, the student climbs over the head of the teacher, and the teacher descends to the feet of the disciple. At this point, there is no duality, no discrimination. The term Buddha body, vessel, student, teacher, no longer really applies. The disappearance of this represents the realization of the path. And so in that way, he's really laying out, in a very deep, ultimate sense, the path of the student of the way. And so that's what I wanted to look at. What is student in Buddha Dharma? What is that? We use that term often and freely. We have a path for entering into formal training as a training student. Right? It was a very clear and deliberate process and path. But anyone who practices the Dharma consider themselves as a student of the Dharma. What is student? And what is teacher? What is teacher? It's really important that in our training that we are clarifying this, right? And not just assuming, making assumptions or taking for granted, because I'm here, I'm a student. Because I have a gray robe, I'm a student. Because I'm a doksan and ask a question, I'm a student. There's some truth to those things, but they're really more on the surface. And that the student has some very particular responsibilities that are the responsibilities of being a student. The teacher, of course, has very particular responsibilities that are essential to being in that role. So what is student? What is teacher? That's what I wanted to look at today. So Dial will come first. And part of this is it's good in and of itself and as training, but also that next month at the end of the May session, Dial will be giving a short talk on a case koan and then inviting all of you dragons and elephants to engage him in Dharma encounter, as I am doing today. So this is both training for that. It's for you dragons and elephants to sharpen your claws and tusks. So Dial will go first and do three bows. And I'd like to open this up to any of you who are doing the Ango. And also, it would be good to have some of you who have spent years in training and have experience in that role as a student, have really engaged that at a deep level and over time, and also some of you who are doing the Ango who are much newer to that, who are newer in student, being a student, or maybe not even students yet, or training, formal training. And if any of you who just got up did last month's Dharma encounter, maybe yield to somebody who hasn't done it yet, this Ango.
Shusanji.
One of the aspects of my service position that I've been aware of is speaking more. And so my words, your words, to make a dichotomy. So considering what I'm going to say and not thinking it to death, and the dichotomy of teacher and student, right? So yesterday talked about whose vessel is it? Is it my vessel? Is it your vessel? It's like, are they my words? Are they your words? Are they the words of a koan I just read in a book? I'm just noticing that that's not completely fluent in me. I'm setting things up.
Mm-hmm. By whose authority do you sit in this role as chief disciple? Anything more? Anything more? Who would you leave out? Who have you left out? The one wearing the robe. The one who is clarifying what is underneath this robe. Whether we feel ready or not, capable or not, we have to step forward under our own authority. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
So, Shanshi, when very soon after I became your student, I came into the room and I said something like, I don't think I know what to do with this relationship, or something like, I don't know how to use this relationship to the best. And you said, you kind of set up and you said, this is not a relationship. When you come in here, it's just you. And I had no idea what you were talking about. And it kind of hurt at the time. And I feel like, you know, all these years later, I maybe a little bit understand what you meant. But I would like to know, because I still don't feel like I really know how to use this in the best way. Mm-hmm. If I ask you again, how would you answer me now?
Let me ask it this way. Let me answer this way. Recognizing that you don't know how to fully use this, how does that sit inside of you? That's how it resolves. When yesterday I said there needs to be discomfort or else it's not alive. But I can speak of it in terms of tensions. I could speak of it in terms of discomforts, different aspects of a lack of comfort, of dis-ease. And that's, you know, we're so conditioned to many unhealthy ways in which there's tension and discomfort. But here it's really vital. You know, I mentioned that all the years I went into Doksan, and in the very last times I ever saw my teacher in Doksan, you know, I never went in casually. You know, I was always a little bit, you know, and in the beginning it was a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety, a lot of the things I was just mentioning. A lot of myself, a lot of my ego. And as those things changed, you know, in a sense what remained was your question. How do I really use this? Right? Am I doing that? Have I really, you know, and not use him. You know, it can sound like that. It's not that. Use what he was offering by sitting in that seat and ringing that bell and inviting me in. And so what I said, I stand by that, and I'll leave you with that. But at the same time, you know, there is another side to that. You know, relationship, I always pause a little bit in using that in terms of this, because relationship is kind of like love. Relationship has so much meaning. You know, I am in relationship with. But there is that. And the danger of not seeing that is that the teacher has a very important role and responsibility, right? Which means we are in relationship, right? So to say it's all you, there's a truth to that. That's what I was pointing to, but I am part of this. The teacher is part of this, right? It's not just the student. That's what makes it alive. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching. Shosanji. So as a student, I try to show up authentically.
What does that mean?
So for me, what that means is I'm so aware that I hold myself back, and I have a tension that kind of has, in my mind, defined me. So being authentic and showing up for me is to be able to not be holding it back with that old barrier of my story about myself. And it's been my struggle.
So how can you be authentic in the midst of that story? In facing your teacher?
Well, I don't know how I try to do it, but as like as I'm with you, it feels like it unfolds. It happens. I sometimes, like in terms of what you bring to that for me, is I see your enthusiasm, and that kind of allows me to open up more. I don't know how to do it. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how to say, oh, how do I access that? Mm-hmm. But I think it's just like by relaxing, mm-hmm. Because I do believe that I have a certain kind of wisdom mm-hmm. that I bring. Mm-hmm. And I also, feel that I don't allow it to show. Mm-hmm. And, I want it to show.
Mm, so do I. You know, I mentioned this morning, I think, that when I began sitting in that seat and students came in, that I began to learn so much about being a student, and there was so much that I reflected on about in terms of my own training as a student. And I remember one of the first times somebody came in, they sat down and they said, "I am so nervous." And I thought, oh my God, you can say that. I never said that, right? Because I grew up in the school of, as the students in the prison would say, you don't show your sweat, mm-hmm. right? Where I grew up, that's weakness, right? So I never just said, I am so nervous, but I was so nervous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in that way, how to be authentic in that moment was so simple. That's what that student was showing me. And for me, it was so far away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And one of the things of being here is you can show it all, you know, and feel like it's okay, because I had spent my whole life trying to cover it. You know, everything was trying to, like, oh, look how strong I could look, or look how unnervous I am.
Because if you had shown it the way you feel able to do here, mm-hmm. what would have happened, or what did happen that held you back or taught you that you couldn't?
You know, it was my entire life was like that, mm-hmm. until I really came here, mm-hmm. and I could sit here and say, like, I'm not okay. I don't know what that story was, mm-hmm. but it was a hardwired one.
Yeah.
And I put all of my energy into not letting anybody see how scared I was.
Yeah.
But I think it was that because no one ever responded.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You know, that's, I mean, is that what we have to do? To be a student, we have to be willing to say, I don't know. I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do this by myself. We have to be willing to say that. When a student comes in and does Shokan for the first time, there's a formal way of doing nine bows, but the way they actually say that has to be their own words, right? They have to say it in their own words. They have to say, please teach me. How important is that? Why is that important? I'm asking.
Yeah.
No, I'm asking.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm
I'll give you a minute.
Yeah, you're asking, and yeah, I'm trying to answer.
Sorry.
Because that, well, the real please, which is please, Shugen, do teach me, is getting to that authentic place.
Yeah.
So please do teach me.
May your life go well. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
You know, I think of those gates of entry, in beginning with the introductory retreat, each of those is teaching us something about being a student of the way, just understanding the path that we're entering into, meeting with the Guardian Council and being asked those questions. Why? Now, why beneath that? Now, why beneath that? Now, why beneath that? When you don't want to do this, why? we don't really have that many opportunities or encounters where we're asked in that way to get clear about something that we're often not really clear about. To have a simple cup of tea and offer a gift, to do a full day of Tongariyo. Oftentimes with students after they've entered, I'll say, reflect on each of those. What were each of those showing you? Because they're showing you, each student, each of us, something important, not just for that process of entry, but along the way. And like asking, right? We need to keep asking. Teachers need to keep asking to be taught, to receive the teachings. I think the most important thing to be a teacher is first to be a student, still, always. Yunnan.
Shosanji. I'm sorry, this is, my feet are cramped. Well, I'll just have to deal with it. So, I was thinking back when I got into this. I had no idea what I was getting into.
Isn't that a good thing?
It's wonderful. I still don't know.
And so, how do you hold that up alongside what you do know?
I just take one step after another.
Mm-hmm. What do you do with what you do know?
How may I help you?
How can that transform into not being a student?
I know how to help you.
What about that which you know? How can that cease to be something that you actually know?
What am I doing here? I don't know. I don't have anything to offer.
Self-doubt, but what's another way?
Can you repeat it? Can you repeat it?
What's another way in which that which you know,
yeah,
truly, moves you away from being a student?
I know.
Right. When it becomes something.
Yeah.
When you become something. Mm. You know, I've been talking about the Prajnaparamita Sutra. It's so unrelenting.
Yeah.
You know. The Buddha said the Bodhisattva does not think, I am practicing, I am gaining insight, I am letting go, I am serving, I am giving.
How wonderful.
Indeed. Indeed. So, okay, may your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
I remember years ago, there was a student, a really good student, fine, excellent person, really sincere student, who left training. And my sense of it was that there was an ambition that was impatient and it wanted more sooner. And I remember talking to Dada Roshi about that, and I said, well, you know, the path is about building confidence in one's own ability, one's capacity, one's understanding. So why does that happen to everybody? Right? Why doesn't every student get to a point where there's like, you know, whether it's ambition or just, you know, I got what I came for? And he said, well, part of the role of the teacher is to try and keep showing the student that there's more. Showing the student what isn't yet clear.
Shosanji.
Shosanji.
Yes.
Shosan is Dharma encounter. She is teacher.
So I guess being a student is trying to meet the teacher.
Say more. What does that mean to you?
Like Dogen talked about in person. I didn't hear your Dharma talk, but... Yeah.
Well, still dripping with birth water. Speak from that place. What is student?
Yeah, it's taking a lot of, it's being very courageous. And
why is that important? Why is that needed?
Because all of life is meeting the teacher.
All of life is trying to meet the student. Why is courage important? Disruption.
No shit.
May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
It sounds nice when we're talking about it. When it's happening, it's not that.
Shasanshi, as I prepare to enter formal training, I am...
Someone's still in the womb.
Mm-hmm. Knocking, pecking.
Okay.
I am so afraid of so many things. I spent years meditating and not telling anyone that I was doing it, trying to hide that I was doing it. If someone found out, I would minimize it, you know, brush it off.
Why?
Vulnerability. It's admitting that I don't know, that I feel like something is missing, that something is not satisfying, that I'm not put together, mm-hmm. and that I'm trying to see if there's something else, that if anything can change. And
what does it mean to be vulnerable?
It means to shed everything that isn't true about myself. And
that sounds very big. Just in one moment of vulnerability, what does that mean? Rather than thinking of shedding everything.
To be here in this seat, to do the thing that makes me shake, that has me shaking for the last 15 minutes online, nonstop. Mm-hmm.
You know, Brené Brown said that, when she talked about vulnerability, said that we all move towards it when we see it in somebody, right? It really is compelling. It opens our heart. So we really are attracted to it, but we don't want to be vulnerable. Why? What is the fear? What is the expectation that behind being vulnerable?
For me, it's rejection.
Exactly. Exactly. And I have to think that that is I just wonder if that is a really ancient, primordial fear. Rejection from your people, your tribe, right? Which meant to be cast out, which was death. And then on a deep, deep level in our genes is that concern. But how can you transform that into something that helps you?
That vulnerability is the sign of my humanity. It's the connection that we all share. That it's something that's in everyone. It means that we're all humans and that we're born to be in community, born to be with each other.
And that fear is universal. People just respond to it differently. Like when a person is arrogant, why? What is the need for that? What is that serving? Right? And so to, you know, the fear of being rejected by others is strong. But what's even stronger? What rejection is even stronger than that?
What rejection is even stronger than that?
Is more significant.
The rejection of what's real inside me.
Rejecting yourself. We can have the love and affirmation and support of everyone. And it won't mean very much at all. Truly, it will not mean very much at all if we are not in full embrace, in person, with ourselves. You don't have to look very far to see testimonies to that. That's why that is never enough, right? So, we'll see you on the other side.
May your life go well. Thank you for your teaching.
Shosanji. I actually was reflecting on Dido's entreaty to trust yourself. And it always used to make me a little nutty when he would say that because, you know, I like the rest of us, have led a life, and I've made a lot of mistakes. I've made mistakes. I've hurt people. And so I thought, how do I trust? Since there were impulses that I followed, which resulted in damage, how could I trust myself? And then on top of that,
well, wait a minute. So how?
How what?
How to trust yourself. How to trust yourself in the recognition that you have done untrustworthy things.
In this context, I guess I don't even know. There's a...
Wait a minute. I don't buy that. I really, absolutely, simply do not buy that. Prove me wrong. Prove me right.
Well, it's the... Those reflections were reflections on the past. And the past is past.
But we're talking about you trusting yourself now.
Right, because the trust of now is now.
But does that mean you're beyond the point of being able to make a mistake and hurt somebody?
Certainly not.
Okay, so how do you trust yourself knowing that?
Something about awareness.
Okay.
An understanding of action, of choice.
Whose?
Mine.
Yes. And?
Through, I want to say the filter, although that sounds technical, of the teaching.
Okay.
The teachings of the Dharma.
That's all good, but you're still on the couch.
What couch?
the couch that you're sitting on. There's awareness, right? There's understanding that there's cause and effect. There's understanding. What do you need to do with that understanding?
Act upon it.
Sounds good. Live it. Live it. So how do we trust, you know, I often say, how do we walk on the path of enlightening, verb, enlightening, while still deluded? How do we walk on a path of cultivating great boundless compassion while still not always compassionate, right? Knowingly. I've told somebody during the session about the subject of trust. My brother, my beloved brother, I love you, brother, wherever you are. When I was younger, he had a rep in our family for being late. Right? He was late. He was always late. And he would just be up doing crazy stuff, meeting somebody, going, you know, he was a very interesting young person, but we were sitting there waiting for him. And so at a certain point, we decided, and we said, we're not going to wait for you anymore. So we're going to meet here, and then we're going to go there. And if you're not there, we're going. And you can try and find us. So how did we trust, how did I trust my brother? Knowingly. I love him, I trust you, but not to be on time. Right? So we can trust knowingly, which incorporates those things that are not wholly trustworthy. Does that make sense? We're not blind. We're not blind to the ways in which I'm not blind to the ways in which I can be selfish, lazy, you know, hurtful, misspeaking, right? But if I don't trust myself, I can't do this. I wouldn't even be here, and neither would you. That's why I'm not buying it. So stop buying it. Get out of here.
You made your life go well.
That's what I've been waiting for.
Shasanshi. Here I am. I've never done this before. I've never felt this before.
That's a beautiful thing. Can you appreciate that?
I'm trying, yeah. Yeah. There's confidence in that, that there's something here, and that from where I'm not clear, I can move forward. Mm.
Don't ever doubt that. You know, one of the things that's important to understand is the subtlety of this. You know, if we don't go to work, if we don't wash our dishes, if we don't bathe, the consequences are obvious. If we don't attend to this, the consequences are there, but they're not always so obvious until they are. When they become obvious, there's really no choice, because the choice has been made, right? The alternative is no longer viable.
There is no alternative. Hmm? There is no alternative.
No, but there is for you. And for many of us, right? I mean, in a sense, we always need to understand we are making this choice, right? But the subtlety, I mean, that's why whenever I talk to a student who's struggling, flailing, wandering, I say, just come to session, right? We'll talk about it then. Right? And it may be that by the end of the session, they've decided to withdraw, fine. But they've done that from within, not from sitting at home with a distant memory that isn't just now a memory. It's a thought. It's an idea. It's not in their body anymore. Get it back into your body.
Yeah.
And then see. And that's how fragile it can be, right? That's why this is so important. We have to keep coming back and drinking from that spring, particularly because in our lives, in a world of chaos and so many things to do, right? That can be lost. You know, practice can be like what happens when you've washed your dishes, you've finished with work, and you've done everything else, right? So, if it's not important, the things that are important, we do. And so feeling that, right, that sense, and tending to that like a baby. Dogen said it's like a baby, it's infant, it's in your arms, right? If you don't feed it, it'll whimper, it'll cry for a while, and then it'll get quiet. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
Shosanshi, it's taken many years, but you know, I'm really just starting to appreciate how my insecurity and my lack of vulnerability are holding me back as a student, as a practitioner, all the ways that I feel stuck and that I just can't show myself and just feel like I keep shoving things down and cutting them off. And, you know, for a while I can make that work, and then over time it's like, this is just killing me on the inside.
Yeah. Have you known, you've been practicing for some years, have you known that that's what you were doing with practice?
Yeah, part of me always knew, but things felt like they were going okay and working out and, you know, wasn't causing any trouble. Mm-hmm. So as long as everyone else was fine, mm-hmm. I could just keep this on the inside.
And so what's different? Why should it be any different?
Well, because as I keep turning the light around, looking at myself, it's just, I guess I just seeing the ways how being inauthentic is holding myself back from really engaging practice. Like, it's basically hitting a wall that I finally hit and seeing I can't do this anymore.
Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about this earlier in the week. Yeah. Kasho brought it up in a way. A person brings it up every time they speak about something that is authentic, which is the ways in which we are conditioned, socialized, we might even say indoctrinated. Not just to certain views and so on, but to a belief about who we are, fundamentally, about who we can be, who we can't be, what's allowed and what's not allowed. You know, I've talked about when I was young, growing up as a boy in Georgia, you know, the rules, the unspoken rules that were present, right? And how did you know they were present? Because if you stepped over a line, the response was immediate and swift. And very oftentimes it was from my own friends. We did it to each other, right? We were walking a tightrope, right? We were all dying inside, right? And we kept each other on that tightrope, right? And so, what had to happen for that mode of being to lead to some shift?
I just had to get exhausted and just give up and surrender.
It is exhausting. You know, I was reading an article by, I think it was Naomi Klein, I think, and she was talking about the current administration and a lot of the people who are in great power now and the image of the Lone Ranger, the cowboy, right? Going off into the sunset, riding alone, doing it their own way, right? and the toxicity, the foolishness, the delusion, the danger, the unreality of that. It's so incredibly precarious, right? Everything is a threat. In the veil of being impenetrable, impervious, confident, in control. It's not just killing you or me, it's killing everyone. And so what can you do?
Show. Oh,
monk of the way.
Show up. Offer myself. Get uncomfortable. Risk being judged and rejected for at the expense of being honest with myself. Like, that should come first.
And provide an example without knowing. Don't know that you are. The moment that you think that you are, come back home. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
So, Shanxi,
when I came into residency earlier this year, I thought I would stay for much longer than I turned out to be staying for. And when I first told some of my friends that I was thinking about leaving, they...
Leaving here? Or
yes,
leaving
here. Mm-hmm. They tried to convince me otherwise, and I kind of was like, bah! Nonsense. I have good reasons.
Mm-hmm. You mean that was your response?
Yes.
Yeah.
I can justify anything. But now that it's time, there's always doubts. Mm-hmm. Living a life of delusion. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're so deep in shit that you can't see the shit.
Yeah.
So how can I trust that I'm not leaving?
Dr. Roshi, just to talk about the person who's up to their eyeballs in shit saying, everything's fine, I'm good. I'm not saying that that's you. I just brought that up in my memory. You know, the dual mind, the divided mind, wants absolute certainty. That's what it does. That's why living by dogma, living in extremes, seems safe. You know, just have a story and stick with it. Then you don't have to think, you don't have to be alert, you don't have to negotiate, you don't have to be alive. But there's no life. That's what you get. And so, in making decisions, it's not always completely clear. When a person is in discernment to be in ordination, that's about as big a decision as a person can make, is going to make in their life, right? And so that they move towards that to develop confidence and a kind of certainty within themselves. But that doesn't mean it's 100%, nor does it mean it needs to be. But how can you leave now, depart, with some doubt, and do that without dividing yourself?
Well, I trust that that I'm aware of this doubt, that I'm practicing it, paying attention, keeping my eyes open, and that's not changing.
When you leave, leave. If you stay, stay. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
Shosanchi, when you're talking about student-teacher and what that's like, I guess the best way it comes to my mind is a metaphor you used, dealing with like a stringed instrument. And over these years, I feel that like I've tuned myself to you.
What does that mean? I'm not sure I like that.
Well, everything has a resonant frequency, right? Like, and I've tried to match yours. With you talk about tension, like the tension in the string.
Okay, so how is that not imitation? How is that not turning away from the self? What if I go off the rails? And you've attuned yourself to me?
Yeah. Wow. I never thought of that.
Think about it. It's not nothing. I got nothing planned. But we should never think that anyone lives in a golden cage, right? Unable to stumble. And so, reflect on that, Dokkan. You know, that's why this is so important, right? Because there are too many stories of that kind of relationship, that kind of reliance, right? Which starts out, can start out very healthy and wonderful and innocent and beautiful, but then becomes something else. And particularly if the teacher's not holding their responsibility well, or is just drunk on their own power, their own desires, or they put that above the student. One of the things about teaching that I feel is the teacher wants the student to free themselves more than anything. But they shouldn't want anything from the student. If you come, come. If you go, go. That's why every student has brought themselves here. Every one of you have brought yourself here. That, I mean, don't think of that in just a mechanical way. It's so important, right? Each of us is choosing this. You're practicing under your own authority. Don't give that away. That's part of the, you know, but don't get drunk on that. Don't misunderstand what that is, right? So that then we can really study. You know, I've told the story about when I went to my teacher once, and I sat down and I said, I'm not you. And he just looked at me, and I said, the point of this is not for me to become you. Like I finally, there was a point where I realized in a certain way, I wouldn't have admitted to that ever. But then in certain ways, that's what is what I was doing, what I thought I was supposed to be doing. And then I realized, no, that's not what I'm supposed to, that's not what he wants me to be doing. And he's my teacher. And I bowed to him and asked him for the teaching. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
Shosanchi. So just reflecting back on all of the moments that brought me here to this moment. Our auspicious meeting in Chelsea. And so many... projects and desires and ideas and...
What about some of those very tough moments that were happening right here? And you're here now.
So they have dissolved in time. They have been passed through and...
But what did they teach you about student, about teacher?
That, all of these manifestations that we experience with our human bodies.
Who are we talking about?
I'm talking about me and you.
Okay.
And
you know, our lives here. There's so much mystery, and so much that we don't know, and that requires trust and faith as it, you know, as we pass through and as it dissolves and we find, you know, we're returning to the center that we share.
Mm. And so much of that mystery is worked out in the grit. In the grit. That's the real thing. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
So, Shanji, so I'm good at following the rules, paying my dues, being a good girl, saying the right things. And I think someone's talking about what being authentic, sincere. It's really important for me to do that in really my heart of hearts, and not just to pay my dues and put the books on the shelf properly.
That's right. That is so important. And I'm going to venture to say that I think everyone here would like that. And it's a challenge, it's a tension, let's say, because part of the way we train is meticulous effort, paying attention, right? There's somebody during all of this week who had a pair of shoes, and every time I walked down to the hallway, right? So I just observed, and then I would pick them up and I put them on the shelf. Come out. Right? It's not about following the rule. What is it about then?
It's about picking up the shoes, feeling the suede of the shoes, putting them on the shelf, putting your hands back in shashu, walking out the door, down the steps.
Step by step. Knowing your mind, knowing your mind, and caring. Caring.
Yeah.
And how do we show that? Because caring is just a feeling until we let it be, we display it. And in that, everything receives that care. So it's really important for us to get that, that the point of all of this is not just to line up like good soldiers, right? But to be examining. That's why it's important to just take up this basic question. What does it mean to study, to be a student? And so to know that at this relatively early stage in your training is excellent. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
Shosanji. Being a student for me, I have not always been a good soldier. Sometimes we've disagreed. I trust you. You earn that in many ways. One is my trust in what you have dedicated your life to. You have a lot of skill and wisdom and heart. And I've seen you reflect and change your mind. I can't do this by myself. I want to live a good life. I want to be of service. I don't always know how to do that. I make lots of mistakes. But I try to learn from them. So being a student, you know, during session, I was reflecting on time. You were talking about sort of back in the day stuff. And I was like, I've been a Jukai student for 20 years. And I didn't come quick to Jukai. When I finally asked, Dido was like, it's about time. I've grown a lot. I've grown so much in this practice in ways that I feel good about. I know that I came in on my knees, suffering, struggling, pissed off. And I'm still pissed off sometimes. But I know better ways to deal with it. And I know how to sit down, find some space, not jump into the decision, but give myself a chance to reflect. I learned this here. I learned this from you. I learned this from Dai. I learned this from Hogen.
You say you can't do this by yourself. I can't do this by myself. There have been times where my mind has changed because you were not being a good soldier. Trust is earned all around, in all directions. When it's injured, it can be repaired. It can be earned back. You know, as you well know, misstepping is an essential part of the path. And the question is, what happens next? You know, Dada Roshi, and I like this, my concluding words this morning, he used to speak about, as I've said, so much about trusting yourself. Trust yourself, he would say, trust yourself. He had a deep karmic insecurity within himself that started very early. Loss of his father, there were reasons. And then he responded to that. We all respond to it in different ways. And the way that that came out, you know, he was a very confident, very forceful teacher. You know that, right? And he loved the Dharma, and he gave his life to this tirelessly. And that karmic underlying thread was still there. I remember when he told me he was shy. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, I'm actually very shy. And then I began to watch him differently, and I realized, oh my God, it's true. He was very uncomfortable, right? When he would sit down at a table with a meal, if somebody didn't engage him, he would just sit there and eat. You know, sound familiar to any of you? And when I would sit next to him, sometimes I would put myself next to him, because I know he would be uncomfortable. And I would ask him a question, and then he would respond, and then it would get going. And part of that was my love for him. And part of it was I was uncomfortable with his discomfort. And so part of training, Tetsugen Roshi said, while he was still Tetsugen before Bernie, that as a student trains more and more with a teacher, they become closer and closer to that teacher's hopeful wisdom, but their humanity. And he said, a lot of students don't want that. They don't want that. They want to be able to hold that person up in that way, right? And so what do we do with that humanity, right? And so when I saw that insecurity in Dada Roshi, you know, and the way sometimes that came out towards others. And I said to him once in a moment, I said, you say trust every, you trust yourself. You trust yourself, but do you trust us? Do you trust us? That was hard for him sometimes. And he had to. And he did. And both of those were true.
Yeah. I need you. Thank you for being there.
And I need you. May your life go well.
Thank you for your teaching.
May our lives go well.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.